columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. Had to drag that question on a little bit long there.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me. I do wonder if you had it scheduled, like, you know, March or so, and that's when they, you know, canceled all elective procedures because of COVID. But yeah, I was surprised to see he did have that high, what was labeled a high ankle sprain late in the season. You remember that Detroit game when he came out? And he was on a drive yesterday with D-Mac and Tyler, and he said that, you know, he fully expects to be ready by training camp. It was a minor cleanup, and he was kind of going through the offseason. It just didn't heal as they had expected, which whenever I hear that, it's a little concerning. But he's, right. You know, he's characterized it as very minor. The team has done the same, and they still fully expect him to be available for training camp and to compete for that left tackle job. I thought it was really interesting when he said that he had no idea he was competing for the left tackle job. Uh-huh. John Elway said it at the draft. So
did he say that? I didn't realize he said that.
Yeah, he said nobody ever like called him or anything. I know, you know, before they tendered him as a restricted free agent, there was that possibility, and he said so himself that, you know, he wasn't sure if they would use him at guard, at tackle, because he's played both. He can play pretty much anywhere, but he was never told outright that he'd be competing with Garrett Bowles at left tackle until he read about it and he heard John Elway say it during the draft. So he's like, oh, great, okay, fantastic.
Well, wow. that is hilarious. Well, I'm getting flashbacks of Vic Fangio talking from the combine, I think it was, and not being told that Brandon Langley had switched positions. And it was right. Like, oh, wait, how's our flow of communication here, guys? That is pretty interesting. Well, we'll see how it all plays out in that regard. Yeah. And, you know, to a, and this has been actually tough to track, because you could say, well, they have enough faith in Garrett Bowles because by their actions, they did not go out and draft a tackle. They did not go out and sign a free agent tackle like Jason Peters. But also, mm-hmm. you do know to a certain degree how they feel about him, because when Juwan James came back healthy, they were talking about rotating at the right. tackle spot. So, like, it's sort of mixed messages, not by their words, but by their actions. And I just, I honestly don't know how they feel about Garrett Bowles.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think he has a lot to prove this season. I think they were encouraged by the steps he took late last season. And, yeah, he was always available, and that's huge, especially on a line that was decimated as much as the Broncos line was. I mean, they were down to their last lineman in that Detroit game. So there is that. I was surprised they didn't draft one. I mean, I thought they were going to possibly take one early.
Me too.
Not, at the very least, take one late to develop them. Because my concern is it's not just Garrett Bowles and the future there and what's going to happen at left tackle. That's obviously a hugely important position, especially with a young quarterback, but I'm concerned about their depth at tackle in general. I mean, Juwan James played all of 63 snaps last year, and, you know, they have only one other guy on the roster who has, you know, played a single offensive snap at tackle. To me, that's a concern. But, you know, they say they want to see what they have in Garrett and Elijah at left tackle before deciding. But, you know, and I think a lot of the concern with, like, with a guy like Jason Peters is, you know, facilities aren't open. They want their medical people to be able to examine somebody's a 38-year-old tackle who's very, very good, but you want to know exactly, you know, what you'd be signing there, and they can't do that.
Yeah, it's a bizarre time. It's unique. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how it all shakes out. We'll see how it all shakes out. It sounds like momentum keeps building, that, you know, facilities are going to open back up. We're hearing what you relayed to us from Governor Polis, and you hear California, mm-hmm. New York, and Texas. It feels like, Nikki, and I'll finish with this. It feels like, from a, like, just taking the temperature week by week, this week in particular has been the most progressive, only within the frameworks of talking about pro sports coming back. It feels like it's right. been the most encouraging. Do you agree with that?
Totally, totally. And I think all eyes are on baseball right now. Hopefully they can reach an agreement soon and get games going. my question still is, you know, if one player gets sick, how is it handled? Do they immediately stop games? Do they, you know, keep going but take a more calculated approach? What do they do? What is the response? And I think that's what so many other leagues are watching, too, is, you know, how does MLB handle things and what can we learn from that? So that's kind of the big test. And that's the biggest thing for me is, you know, you can take a lot of measures to kind of keep guys socially distance and, you know, put in, you know, make sure everybody's wearing masks and using hand sanitizer. But what happens when that one person gets sick? And you got to think, you know, given how fast this virus has spread, that there's a strong chance that it could happen, you know, and then what?
Yeah, well, that's a huge question right there. We don't know the answer to it right now, but I think they're going to find out this summer. Nikki, we'll leave it there for now. We appreciate you joining us. Great stuff, as always. And we'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, there she Nikki. Goes, the one and the only, Nikki Jabala. All right. Man, there's a lot to get to. I'll just pass this along. The breaking news from Adam Schefter within the last 60 seconds. Cowboys pass rusher Aldon Smith. Actually, how do you think this statement's going to finish? Cowboys pass rusher Aldon Smith
is reinstated.
Is conditionally reinstated by the NFL today, per source. He's now cleared to take part in the Cowboys virtual offseason program.
Good for him. You know, it's been a long journey for him, and pulling for him. Hopefully, he can get everything back on track, and he can play in the NFL for a few years and stay clean and stay on the right path and do the right things. And so pulling for him. Hopefully it works out well for him.
Yep. I'm with the same approach as you have here, rooting for Aldon Smith and straighten out your life and maybe pass it along, you know, pay it forward to some others.
That's right.
All right. I want to hit this Tom Brady story really quick.
Okay.
D-Mac tweeted last night he believes that Tom Brady is cheating or has been cheating.
Oh.
Yep, he said, here's Tom Brady cheating again.
But yesterday, with the practice or?
Yep. And I'm going to lay this out here. Yesterday morning, Brady met up with these guys that I mentioned before, the two backup quarterbacks, which I was honestly pretty surprised to see were a part of the mix. His center was there, Ryan Jensen, who, by the way, is a Colorado guy. He is
my former teammate.
Oh, is he your former team in Baltimore?
Red. Yep, Baltimore.
Okay. You call him Red because they're there. That's great.
Yeah, Red.
He's from Fort Morgan, he went to CSU Pueblo.
One of the best centers in the game. We got paid a ton from Tampa Bay.
Really cool. Really cool. So he was there. Mike Evans, Scotty Miller, wide receivers, tight ends, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, running back there. They all met at Berkeley Preparatory, and who coincidentally nickname is the Bucks. The NFL said that there was nothing wrong with Brady working out with teammates as long as they followed recommendations and guidelines set by the state, local authorities, medical experts, and the league.
Right. Which is a lot of guidelines. Okay, you're going to start working out with your guys. I mean, you're not going to always be 6 feet away from each other.
No, and they weren't in the pictures.
Right. It's just not going to happen. I mean, look, it is what it is. I mean, so I don't know what to tell you. I mean, so you think they're breaking the rules because of that?
Well, here's
where we're going with this?
Well, I got one more little detail to pass along. It is possible that these workouts started weeks ago. All right? It was Cameron Brate who was on the Doc Talk with Killer Instagram live show. Don't ask me what that is.
Okay.
But I know it's one of the hosts is Tampa Bay Lightning forward Alex Killorn. Okay. All right. So it's a Tampa Bay centric podcast, I suppose. But they had on Cameron Brate back on May 7th. All right. So you're talking about a couple weeks ago. Okay. A couple weeks ago on May 7th, Cameron Brate said that they have been working out with Brady. And then he tried to walk it back, saying that they were, quote, virtual workouts. And the Tampa Bay Lightning player, Killorn, said, virtual workouts, and you've been doing them on your laptop.
Right.
He said, don't worry, that will be edited out of the final version. But it never was.
Right.
It was put out there. It's Instagram Live. So this is really the crux of what I wanted to get to. If this guy's saying they've been working out on May 7th, that means in the midst of the pandemonium of the pandemic, lockdown, home orders, it sounds like these guys were still getting together.
Well, I mean, look, I was able to play golf. Guys have been able to get out. So, well, I don't know what those workouts were looking like, but certainly, yes, they were doing that. Okay, I mean, it was happening. It's not a shock that Tom's been down to Tampa Bay, and it's a new offense, and he's trying to get guys together to go out there and throw and go through reps and try to improve. What else would you expect? That's the way I look at it. Is he cheating? No, I don't think he's cheating. Is he breaking the law? I don't think he's breaking the law. So Florida, I don't know what their laws were down there. Stay at home, not stay at home. You saw people on the beaches and doing all this stuff in Florida. So don't quite know what the rules were. But at the same time, look, you knew it was going on down there in Tampa. You got a quarterback like Tom Brady who's trying to learn an offense. Certainly he's going to be working out with his guys, and they're going to be trying to keep it secret. To me, whatever. It doesn't bother me one bit at all. Okay. That's just the way I look at it. I don't consider it cheating. I don't consider it breaking the law. If you want to do it, go ahead and do it. Okay? And everybody's different in these times and circumstances, and that's just the way I look at it. How do you view it?
You know, man, this is tricky. This is tricky when you start talking about this thing, because this has, in the last 2 weeks, actually become a super, super divisive topic across the country, where for a while there, for about 6 weeks, it felt like everyone was kind of on the same page with the stay-at-home order and the social distancing and the serious nature of it all. But it seems like in the last couple weeks, it's becoming a politicized, where if you are on the right, you're down for opening up America and let's get back to business. And if you're on the left, it's more of, and I'm generalizing here, but it's more of a super precautious, we need a vaccine, what the heck are you guys doing type of attitude. And again, I'm using broad strokes here.
Sure.
And even with myself talking about it on this radio show with you, my friend, 2 weeks ago, you know, I said that, you know, we're still practicing social distancing, and I had a half a dozen people hop on the text line saying, I can't believe you're living in fear. You know, this is what the media has done to you, and you got your tail between your legs. I mean, this is seriously stuff I was reading. And then a week later, I say I link up with one other guy and play basketball, and the other side of it is saying that I'm the cause of the pandemic. Yeah. So there's no winning here.
Nope.
But to go back to your question, do I think that Brady is bending the rules a little bit? I think right now he is not. If this was going on a month ago, I think that it would have been viewed that way, because things have changed in the last month. Even the governor, Ron DeSantis, has, you know, loosened things up in Florida where this is happening here within the last week or two. So I think it's a complicated answer to your question. I don't think he's really doing anything wrong right now, per se, especially if they're trying to go about it responsibly. But if this was happening, you know, a month ago when you were ordered to stay home and it was a little bit more stringent than it is right now, then I think that it was, you know.
Quotes, stay at home. You could still go out, go to the grocery store. You could still still go play golf. You could still go play golf. They're playing golf down in Florida, 2 months ago. You could still do those things. So so why can't you go out there and throw a football with a guy or two? Just as long as you're 6 feet away, you're out in an open air environment. Why can't you do that? If you want to do that, why can't you do it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I look at it like, hey, I think, obviously – look, every state's different and every approach is different and all this stuff, but if they're going to go do it, they're going to go do it. That's on them. That's on them. But I don't look at it like, oh, they're skirting the rules and they should get in trouble for it. That's not the way I'm viewing it.
Yeah. Yep. And someone else on the RamosLaw.com text line says, if the Broncos aren't doing this, then I'm upset.
Right.
So, look, I mean, this is...
Especially now. I think they should be. You're looking all around. You're able to get together. I mean, you get guys together and go find a park. I know a couple right around here that you could go find. So, to get together, you got a kind of same situation as Tampa. A lot of new pieces, especially, you know, new offense that the quarterback's got to learn, new offense in Tampa that the quarterback's got to learn, and a lot of young wide receivers here. Look, if you can get together... You know, this is the time to get guys together and get Hamler and Judy up here for, you know, a week and spend seven straight days with these guys and start getting some reps going. And that's valuable stuff. And if, you know, if somebody wants to film it, you know, and get it to the coaches, they just say, hey, if that happens, it happens. I mean, but certainly, yes, these things happen all the time. And, you know, when I'm talking about filming it and doing that, that stuff happens. And I'm sure that somebody was probably filming the Bucks out there, whether it be, you know, assistant equipment manager, a film guy, or somebody might have been there, you know, taking some video and filming that stuff for the coaches to view. That's just part of it.
Yeah. I am very, very, very encouraged this week, and I'm very encouraged today with the news that is breaking. It sounds like... the NBA is grooving its way with a path back to playing games. Adrian Wojnarowski in the last hour has said, reporting with Zach Lowe, NBA teams are expecting the league office will issue guidelines around June 1st that will allow franchises to start recalling players who've left their markets to return as a first step towards a formal ramp up for the season's resumption. This is happening, Stoke, and it's happening today. It's happening right now that these stories are developing. The Athletic putting it out there that Orlando's Walt Disney World Resort is on track to win the bid to become the NBA's playing site to resume the 2019-20 season, with the hope emerging of games tipping off by mid-July.
Mid-July, okay.
Man, if you told me that games were tipping off in mid-July right now, where do I sign?
Yeah. I'm with you. What does it look like? How many games do the Nuggets have left? Is it around 20?
It's a little bit less, I think, than that.
A little bit less than 20? Do you think they finish this thing out?
Man, that's a great question.
I mean, it was right around 20. I remember that. 18, 17, 20, something like that. Do they finish the season out? What does it look like? Is it an abbreviated season?
It looks like the Nuggets have 17 games left, by my quick count here. I don't think you finish it.
And they only play like one game a week nowadays. They used to play five, six games a week, and now they only play once a week. So that's going to be a long time if they try to do all 17.
Well, you're wrong about that again. I don't.
Just kidding. I always say that, though.
I know. I don't think they finish 17 games. I just don't think there's enough time left.
Right.
Unless you're going to shorten playoff series, which I would vote against. I'd rather see less regular season and the same playoff series structure that we've gotten accustomed. But if you're telling me that you're going to try to play 17 regular season games at the start of mid-July, that puts you to the middle of August before you're starting your playoff series. The playoffs are going to last over a month. That puts you into the 1st of October. Training camps start in the NBA during, I want to say, late September. So
I just have to push everything back.
You could do that, I guess. I guess you could push back the start of the 2021 season if you wanted to keep it uniform with the past of how many regular season games.
Or do you just chop off like 10 games and say, okay, look, everybody's going to play 10 less games? Do you think they might do that?
Yeah, and I think I'd be in favor of that. You know, just call it 10 games, just to keep it even. Play 10 regular season games, finish the season, and if you start in mid-July, that means you're probably ending by, call it the first week in August, and then you can kick off the NBA playoffs and get it done by, you know, call it the middle of September.
And still have the same playoff format, right? You know, just still have that and just shorten the regular season here. I think the big question, Zach, is, you know, a lot of people, not us, but just a lot of people partake in different things with the NBA, over-unders, you know, like win totals for the season. What happens to those? You know, I mean, what happens to
those? For those people.
Yeah.
For those people.
It's a big question for those people.
For those people, I think you get your money back.
Maybe you got a. Did your guy ever get back to you, or did he say a new phone? Who this?
Oh, yes. Yes, he did.
Did he get back to you?
Me.
So you reached out. Go ahead and set it up.
Yeah, so I reached out to
maybe check with him on that other one for those people, because we got a lot of listeners that are probably curious about the over under season total for teams.
I can reach out to him on behalf of those people.
Yes,
but
yes.
I reached out to Jay Cornegay, who is the general manager at Westgate. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And he went to college with Chris Fuseli, the owner of the Blake Street Tavern. So years ago, Jay came to visit his college buddy, and he introduced me. And I've seen him now like three times since then. He comes every year to Denver.
Was he at Blake Street one day?
Yes.
Did we meet him together?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah.
Yep.
Okay,
And we kind of hit it off and exchanged numbers. So, you know, I've kind of just reached out through the years to say Happy New Year or stuff like that just to check in with him. And
What do you think about this?
Yeah.
What do you think about this parlay? Should I take the money line here?
Joking.
But it's so interesting. Goodness. Because what they do is they create the spreads. So we react to the spreads, but Jay's group, they help create them. And they have help and algorithms and all that. But I reached out to him and said, hey, I'm reaching out because I'm curious how NFL lines will be affected with home and away teams without fans, if they play without fans. And typically, the home team, right off the bat, before any conversation about the matchup, the home team gets 3 points. You're playing in their stadium with their crowd noise. You have to travel. But I wanted to know if it's still the standard 3 points. And he said, hey, Zach, it depends on who you ask and what team. Places like Miami and Jacksonville, et cetera, not worth anything. Seattle, KC, New Orleans could be 1.5 to 2 points. Can't wait to get the Superbook app up and running with our partners. And looking late June, it shouldn't be later than July 4th for some of the official answers to that question.
Oh, gotcha. So obviously it looks like it would be affected a little bit, right?
Yep. So like for a place that has great crowd noise like Kansas City, you're talking about removing 2 of those points.
Oh, wow.
Like 2 of the 3. So going to Kansas City would only be worth 1 as opposed to 3, the standard 3 points for the home team.
Yeah, we always say 3, but I'm sure, like he's saying right there, it makes sense if you're going to play in a place like Miami or Oakland where the top is tarped and, you know, and you're not getting much crowd noise, that 3 probably isn't 3. It's probably, you know, 2, 2.5 now for the home team because you don't really have a great home field advantage, right?
Right. Right. No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is interesting. It is interesting.
But you play in Seattle or like Kansas City or, you know, even Denver or a dome team. I mean, it might be 3.5 with that crowd noise.
Yes. Yes. Good point. It goes the other way, too.
Yeah.
It goes the other way, too. It's fascinating. And by the way, and we're going to have this conversation here in just a couple minutes. We'll try to get it in here. And if not, we'll do it tomorrow. But the conversation of like, We're going to be playing without fans isn't necessarily 100% accurate according to one NFL owner.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
so we can get into that conversation in just a minute.
Yeah, looking forward to that. But interesting stuff.
Yeah,
but maybe reach out for your guy because I know I'm seeing a lot of people want to know about the over under. You know, if the season's short, what happens there.
Oh, man. I got to give a quick shout out here on the way out of this segment. Didn't I tell you that, I know I did, that I've been linking up with the same guy and playing one-on-one basketball? This is before the pandemic, but I'm playing one-on-one. I met him by happenstance. He's a really good high school player around here named Addison. He played at East High School. They won a state championship. His brother's a terrific player. And I was meeting up with him like 3 times a week, and it actually like changed my life. I wasn't playing basketball like this at all, and I totally got back into it because of this dude. During the pandemic, he moved to Seattle, Washington. And so I lost my one-on-one partner, and it totally stinks. He broke the news to me, and I'm like, no, you're not going. We need you here in Denver. He's like, no, I got to. He works on. He's a tech guy. Works with stadiums, and they are. He works with tons of pro teams, and one of them is going to be the new hockey team coming to Seattle, to Key Arena. And he is working with them and I believe the Seahawks Stadium and implementing new technologies and all this stuff. He's a bright kid. But he's listening to us right now on the YouTube stream from Seattle. So I wanted to say hi to my buddy Addison.
Shout out to Addison. And I know all the stories of Zach telling me how much he dominated you aren't true. So I can't wait to hear the true story from you, Addison. Yeah, shout out to him, though. That's awesome. Seattle's a great place. I lived there for 4 or 5 months. And you talk about for the first couple months there, I mean, it was as good as it gets. And you know, then you have the overcast rainy days start to hit. But, man, what a pretty, pretty city. And I had a blast there. It was a fun 5 months. Right there in Bellevue, baby.
I went back and watched the highlights of the Beastquake game, and there you were getting over the top of someone and scoring
just
a touchdown.
Just running by people. Exactly. Yeah, just running by people. I don't know which game it was, but yeah, I mean, it just happened a lot. I think they blew the coverage. They just blew the coverage.
You were wide open.
There I am. I just ran a running a corner route, and you know, just once they just overlook. You know, hey, don't worry about the white guy. I ain't gonna throw it to the white guy here, and just I just slipped through. You know, I just like, oh, it's just walking through. Nobody notices you. Next thing you know, you run by him, and you're wide open, and there I was, and the ball's in the air, and stinking catch a touchdown in a playoff game, and just, you know, hey, shout out to Josh McDaniels for cutting me that year. Thank you.
That's right. And you caught a touchdown the next week, if I'm not mistaken, too, in the divisional round. Isn't that right?
Yep. Against the Bears.
That's
you
awesome.
You talk about freezing cold, and that was like playing, that field was like playing on concrete. We had a tight end catch the ball on the sideline, and he got upended, and his head hit the ground on out of bounds.
Oh, no.
It was not a pretty sight.
Oh,
a pretty sight at all. Yeah. I mean, that thing was like playing on concrete. You want to talk about unsafe? Wow. That thing was bad condition, and it was just rock solid. I mean, it's so hard.
Well, I think it's so cool that us at the Fan, you have this all-time play, and it's an all-time NFL memory. Beastquake, you caught a touch. You were on the team and caught a touchdown in that game, and Tyler Palumbus, who is the lead blocker for Marshawn Lynch, does our drive time show.
How about that?
I mean, I just think
Tyler's
that's the
just running
thing.
Around there, head on a swivel, looking for somebody to take out.
Yeah.
Me and Tyler had so much fun that year. That was so much fun. I mean, it seemed like 2-3 times a week we were just playing cards, and, you know, that was a fun year for me. Because I went up there solo. You know, my family
right?
would come
yeah.
visit.
Yeah,
but
I
signed
that.
There after the third week of the season, and just like, all right, well, you know, my wife's like, well, I'm not moving up there right now. Kids are in school.
Yeah,
young
kids.
I went up there myself, and I was just solo and just kind of in the place that I lived. Everybody, you know, a lot of guys lived there. So it was Golden Tate and guys like that. And we just played a lot of cards and hung out. It was a fun time.
That's great. I love it. I love to hear that stuff.
Shout out to Addison. Have fun in Seattle.
I love it. All right. During our call with Nikki said all eyes are on baseball right now. And Tim Kirchen points out or points to a hangup with a potential return to the game. We'll tell you what it is next. All right, Stope. We were talking to Nikki a little bit earlier today, who does a great job for The Athletic. And she said, you know, with these other sports leagues, they kind of have their eye on baseball, which I thought was interesting. And Tim Kirchen joined our friends in the morning, Schlereth and Evans, yesterday morning, and said that there's a hang-up, and the players just are not happy. The players are just not happy with the proposed restrictions. This is what Tim Kirchen said.
Well, the players I've talked to, the feedback is all bad. However, I spoke to, look, there's just no way you're going to get a player to stop spitting in a major league game. That's what they do all the time. And they're going to take sunflower seeds also. But I was told yesterday by someone who might know that this is just something that was put down on May the 15th. So everyone involved realizes, okay, these are some of the things we have to put down. Like, so everyone will say, yes, we can move forward if those are the rules. But those can't be the rules once the game starts, because you won't be able to play a major league game if there's no touching an opponent or there's no spitting or sunflower seeds. It's just not going to happen.
And we sort of touched on this the other day with Patrick Saunders. The restrictions that they put together in this, like, 67-page document, it just seems a little bit over the top, and it sounds like from Tim Kirchner, the players are like, no.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit overboard, but at the same time, you know, they got to try to put everything in there that they can think of and see, I guess, what the players will accept and what they won't accept. So, you know, they're trying to look out for the safety of everyone and, you know, hey, no spitting, no high fives, no touching your face, no doing. So you're going to put all that out there and see what, you know, hey, what can we compromise on and what can stay and what can go, right?
Right, right. So just it needs to be realistic, really, is what it needs to be. And it just, when we were going over it the other day with Saunders, it just was not realistic. So, all right, that's one conversation that Tim Kirchner was having. Also, he was saying that the Major League Baseball officials need to watch closely the Korean Baseball League.
Well, they've learned a lot, and they should be watching every inning of these games because they might be the blueprint for what baseball is going to look like if it comes back this year in the major leagues, to see how a game operates with no fans in the stands and how, you know, stadiums are operated when there are no, you know, when there aren't as many people working the ballpark, and how the broadcast system goes and how the ratings are. I mean, there are so many things that can be learned from this, but the fact that professional baseball is being played somewhere in the world now at least gives you hope that Major League Baseball will be played. But as we all know, the Korean situation, you know, they handled the COVID so long ago, and they're mostly on the way out of it, it appears. And the United States is still right in the middle of it. We have to get to the point where the, you know, the virus is going away before we're going to do anything with baseball, because the health and safety of the players and the fans and everyone around the game is going to have to be first and foremost.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, of course. I mean, you know that they're looking at the Korean League if they're back to playing and the protocols and the restrictions that they have in place, and see what's working for them, what's not working for them, what the MLB could make possibly tweak and try to make better. But certainly, you know, you're going to look at any kind of situation that you can to try to gather information. So a team's playing, you know, a Major League Baseball is playing somewhere, is playing in Korea. Okay, let's see how they're doing things. Let's see how it's working for them. So certainly I think you could get some proof on what to do and get some facts on the things that are good and some things that maybe aren't working so good for them. So certainly I think Major League Baseball would be doing that and is looking into all avenues to try to get back to play and but do it safely, like Tim was saying.
This is more Tim Kirchen answering the question, will teams play at a central hub like it's being proposed in the NBA?
I do know the commissioner's office has contacted at least 16 of the 18 states that have a major league team. And yes, some of them are going to be able to say, yes, we'll play here and we'll play with fans in the stands as long as there's social distancing. That's what you get from some governors and some states. But what happens, this is a legitimate question, what happens if the state of Pennsylvania says, sure, the Phillies and the Pirates can play whenever they want in their home ballparks here, but the governor of Ohio says, well, the Reds and the Indians aren't going to play in their home ballparks here. So what happens then? I think there's going to have to be a centralized place for teams to play if they can't play in their home state. And what if a team doesn't get to play a home game all year? I mean, how big of a disadvantage is that? These are all questions that don't have answers at this point. And until we get those answers, we're not going to play baseball.
Really interesting. And you hear Stink smacking his lips again.
I thought that was you.
No, that was Stink.
Oh, that was goodness, Mark. Please tell me if I'm doing that. I know you told me when I'm doing the microphone and stuff, and sometimes
that's gotten much better, by the way.
Oh, has it? Okay, I'm working on it. But if I'm smacking, just text me and say, hey.
smacking over here. You're really breathing hard into the microphone like Case Keenum, okay?
Right.
So help me out there.
I will.
I'd appreciate it. But, no, hearing him and what he's saying, but you're seeing and you're hearing more states opening up and being more receptive to teams playing, maybe it's without fans, but at least teams coming back and playing in their home stadium. You know, you heard from New York, California. I mean, they're getting more open and receptive to that happening. So will it be centralized? Well, what if 90% of Major League Baseball states that teams are playing and say, okay, yep, you can do it, but there's only three teams that can't do it or four teams that can't do it. Now all of a sudden, do you make everybody go to a centralized location, or you tell those four teams, you know what? Well, hey, buddy, you're going to be going down to Texas. You're going to be going down to Florida. You're going to be going here. You're going to be going there. That's where y'all going to be having to play, and we'll figure this thing out. Obviously, you see the NFL and the way the NFL is working. They're like, hey, this is the way it is. It is what it is. Some teams might have it a little bit more difficult than other teams when it comes to doing the draft and doing things like that. Now you try to make it even as possible, even playing field as possible, but at a certain point, hey, it is what it is. You got to adapt, you got to overcome. Do we want to play ball or do we not want to play ball? Do we want to make money? Do we not want to make money? Of course, everybody wants to make money, and some teams might be at a little bit more of a disadvantage than others, but guess what? It is what it is.
Yeah,
that's the way I look at it.
Well, you know, and I think more and more people are kind of getting to that point.
Right.
You know, that
it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it's not based off frustration, I don't think. It's more of just being realistic.
Right.
Like we are not going to have the vaccine for quite some time. So what do we do then? Do we let this, you know, in this Forbes article talking about the impact that is going to be felt with the lack of fans, and Nikki brought this up, like, there is more than one side to the health conversation. There is the economic health of this whole thing. And obviously, I'm not, you know, reinventing the wheel or breaking news to anybody here, but when you start looking at the dollars lost to a local economy like Denver, that if you're saying that the Broncos are going to lose $162 million if fans aren't there, well, that's tickets and, you know, parking or whatever. What about all the local businesses and all the local workers who depend on this sort of thing for their income? The stadium workers, the parking lot attendants, the local restaurant owners near
hotels,
the stadium,
bar,
hotels.
Yes,
bar, I mean, it all adds up to hundreds of millions of dollars, if not breaking through the threshold of $1 billion. So it's a thick, large conversation with many different moving factors. I refuse to believe that there's just one right approach to this conversation, because reasonable minds can disagree on several of these factors, but there's more of a story to tell than just, you know, about the sickness of the actual COVID-19.
Yeah, there's more than one right answer, because this thing's changing daily, it seems like. What's happening and what's going on? But certainly, I think if you're a team, if you're an organization, you got to understand that you might be at a little bit more of a disadvantage than other teams. And it's not normal right now. Things aren't normal. That's just the way it is going to be this year. And you got to try to overcome and adapt to the situation, to what's going on. And so we'll see how this thing plays out, you know, when it comes to Major League Baseball, but and when it comes to the NFL and what it looks like. And, you know, will some stadiums have fans and some can't have fans, or will they not let any stadiums have fans? I think, you know, if governments and states allow, you know, the Broncos to have fans, but in California you can play but you can't have fans, I think the NFL is going to say, okay, well, hey, as long as you do it right and there's proper protocols in place there, and maybe you can have, you know, a certain amount of tests involved and let that amount of people in, whatever it may be. But there might be different rules for different states and different rules for different teams. And that's just the way it's going to be this year.
Yeah, and it's an interesting quotes from Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper, who today expressed optimism that while NFL games likely won't feature stadiums that are chock full at capacity, that doesn't mean that the games won't have some fans in the stands. He said, quote, you won't be playing having full stadiums, but that doesn't mean you can't have some fans in stadiums either. And he said this during an interview with CNBC earlier today. He said, if you're comfortable being in a closed airplane for a cross-country trip 18 inches apart, maybe with two seats in between you and being 5 feet away from each other, you might be comfortable in an open-air stadium. Tepper added, there should be some amount of fans in the stadium depending on what locale and where you are and what the local rules are there could possibly be, end quote.
I love it. And, you know, you told me that a month ago, I would have been like, I don't know about that for myself personally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to go to a game and just even risk it. But now I'm like, okay, I can see how this could happen. He's right. We're getting on an airplane, and you're going to be, you know, within a couple feet of somebody. But, you know, you're wearing masks, you're washing your hands, don't touch your face, all these proper protocols that you can do to help yourself out. Look, I'd be more than willing to go to a football game right now. You tell me I go to a football game, and you're going to have social distancing in play, and you're not going to have, obviously, 70,000 people in there right now. But, you know, I don't know, 20,000? What will it look like? I'm not sure. But right now, my tune has kind of changed when it comes to this. And I would be, hey, I can go to that Broncos-Tampa Bay game. I'll buy myself a ticket right now, and I'll be going there. That's kind of how my view has changed of this. But certainly it has to be with the right protocols in place, and, you know, do you wear a mask and have, you know, hand sanitizing stations and all those things in play? Yeah, I would be on board. Well, I mean, Broncos country, how would you feel about that? Would you still be hesitant, or you still be like, hey, I'm good to go? Hit us up, 303-713-1043. Let us know how you feel about it. How do you feel, Zach?
If it was properly constructed, and I'm not talking about like every other seat, I'm talking about, you know, being 6 to 8 feet apart, not having
two seats in between you. What is that? 4 or 5 feet?
Yeah, I'd say it's about, I'd say about 5-6 feet. Yeah. Two seats apart. As long as no one's sitting directly behind me or directly in front of me. Yeah. And I have the seat in front of me, which I like to put my legs on anyway because I'm 6'3", and I'm all cramped up there. But if the 6'2". If the seat in front of me is empty, the seat behind me is empty, and uh-huh. and I got four open seats, two to the right of me, two to the left of me,
uh-huh.
and people are required to wear masks on top of it, I think I'd be cool.
I'd be
all right.
Yeah, I am. I'd be good with it. So. And it'd be interesting to see what those tickets would go for. We kind of talked about it. I don't know when it was, but you talk about a premium for some of those tickets.
Because oh my!
I think most people would say, especially right now, and the way this thing is going, people are becoming more open and receptive to getting out and doing and living life right now. That's what I've seen just getting out. Those tickets, say you can only get, I don't know, say 15,000, 20,000, whatever it might be, 10,000. I mean, how much were those? You're talking about the opening game Monday
Boy,
night against
that's a
the Titans.
Penny.
How about Tampa Bay coming to town with Tom Brady? Huh?
Boy.
Whole lot of money.
That's a whole lot of money. Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
StubHub would be jumping.
Yes.
Oh my
yes.
gosh. Well, I hope we can.
I hope we get to that point where, you know, we can have some fans in the stadium. I don't think, you know, it's going to be 70,000, but hopefully they could be some fans that are able to get into the stadium.
Yep, that would be nice. And we're just kind of spitballing here.
Sure.
You know, what does
well,
it
David,
actually look like? We're just tossing
right.
around ideas here.
And
brainstorming.
We reacted to David Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, saying this. And when you take a step back and you kind of think about it and look at it, and you know, it makes sense. I mean, you're talking about an airplane closed quarter environment, and you're a lot closer than 6 feet to people there. But obviously, you know, they're trying to take the right steps and, you know, giving you wipes when you walk on, and you have to have a mask on and those types of things to try to make it as safe as possible. Obviously, an open air stadium, you know, if you got a couple seats around you that are, you know, not vacated, hey.
Yeah, and I'm seeing
I'm seeing
a lot of reaction on the RamosLaw.com text line. Someone said, you know, wouldn't be two seats away for everybody because you could go as a family unit. And makes sense. Again, we're just sort of thinking out loud, brainstorming, and reacting to the Panthers owner David Tepper's comments. But I'll say this. I am seeing the majority, not all, because I'm looking at a text that says no way, but more than 50%, a healthy more than 50, so it could be 70%, is saying that if you go about it the right way, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah. That's kind of what I thought it would be. You'll still have people that don't want to do it and put themselves at risk, which is fine. But for me, I would be open to it, just doing it the right way. And I'm sure if it's allowed to happen, you're going to have a lot of protocols in place. Whether it be you have to get scanned and your temperature, is there going to be testing for fans available? Those types of things. We'll see what it looks like, and if it's even a viable option at that point, might not even be. But certainly, just to be able to talk about it, that we might be heading in that direction is a good thing. I just want to see football.
You're gonna see football, Brandon Stokely.
When it happens, it happens. But until then, I'm not gonna go all in because I don't want to be disappointed, Zach. I don't like to be disappointed.
Well, you know what? I went for it on 4th and 4 from my own 35. Yesterday, I'm willing to be disappointed.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that.
Oh my gosh.
And you're criticizing Vic Fangio for going for a 2-point play from the 1-yard line against the Chiefs in the first quarter.
Never again.
You're a bad football coach, Zach.
Oh my gosh. Yo, my Madden decisions and Vic Fangio on Thursday Night Football, one and the same. I'm seeing a ton of reaction to this conversation here on the RamosLaw.com text line, and not as divisive as I thought it was going to be. Someone says, hey, quit spitballing, knucklehead. It's going to be impossible. How do you decide, which season ticket holders get to go, who gets left out? It'll be impossible to regulate. I'm telling you right now, they will figure it out.
Right,
because
exactly.
What I tell you, $162 million is going to come out of the Broncos' pocket if people don't show up and watch the games in person. There's too much money to be lost to not have or to not be proactive in thinking about it or approaching it.
Right, exactly. If they can put the things in place to allow it to happen, you have a lottery. Hey, you got the short end of the stick. You can't go. You can't go. Sorry. You just try to make it fair for everybody, and that's all you can do. But if it's a way to happen and they can make it happen, they're going to find a way to make it happen. Right?
That's the bottom line
because of the bottom dollar. The dollar. It's a lot of money that they're losing out when fans can't go to stadiums. And so if they're allowed to get fans into the stadium and they think that they can do it and do it safely, they're going to make it happen. Now, hey, if 10,000 people have to be upset or 30,000 season ticket holders have to be upset because they didn't get drawn to be, go to that game, then just so be it. Sorry.
Yeah, and
it's just the way it's going to be.
And you could do it like this. Hey, we're doing a lottery for game one. If you win the lottery for game one, you're now not included in
That's
the lottery
right.
for game two. And you could check off, how many if you got 70,000 ticket holders and you have 8 football games, and even if you let 10,000 people in the door each time, that takes care of your whole season ticket list just one game. So there's just, if you're telling me $162 million can be lost if no fans, and the Broncos can cut that down to a $50 million loss, or even a $100 million loss and recoup $62 million, it's a business. They're going to do it if there's an avenue to do it.
That's right. And so, but the news, the NBA news today, you're hearing baseball hopefully getting back on track if they can get some things figured out. But the NBA news today, that's good news, man. It seems like every day we're getting more positive news. And so I like where we're heading. Hopefully we'll be able to see basketball here. But do make sure you reach out to that guy, because I've seen a lot of RamosLaw.com texts looking over-unders if the season gets shortened a little bit. What are they going to do about that?
I have it pulled up here, and I can't find one, but I'll trust you're maybe behind me in the on the
They're on there. They're all over it. I'm telling you, they're all over it. They want you to reach out to your guy and see what he says about it.
All right, I'm gonna go sink a birdie. How about that?
Yeah, go get yourself a par, my man.
I love it. So great. I had a great time with you today.
Fun
it was
show.
Really fun. And I'm telling you what, when I tell you tomorrow's gonna be locked and loaded, I am not kidding. We're gonna
have something about the architect.
The architect,
ooh,
Bill Polian, is gonna join us at 12:30. We talk some Drew Locke. We're gonna hear from other Broncos. I'm already looking forward to the show. Have a great rest of your afternoon, partner.
You too, buddy.
All right, Stephen Priest, the most underrated Stephen Priest, behind the glass.
Thanks, Effie.
And thank you, Stephen. All right, we toss to the drive coming up next.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.